Good morning, and the conversation continues here on 94 WIP All Sports Radio as we ease on into WIP Sunday. This morning it's a rainy WIP Sunday, although it's going to clear up, so maybe save your errands for this afternoon. But no matter where you go, take 94 WIP with you, because there'll always be hot conversation. And I'm going to get right to work now with my next guest. His name is Thomas Moore. He is a philosopher. He is a spiritual person. He's got a lot to say. And his new book, The Ageless Soul, offers us a look at the process of aging, something every baby boomer is experiencing. Good morning, Thomas Moore.
Good morning, Peter.
How do you describe who you are and what you write?
It's really hard to say. I was in a Catholic monastic order, so that affected me a lot. I went on and got a PhD in religious studies, and it's interested in how spirituality and psychology connect. And since after teaching for a while, I've been an author primarily, and I travel the world a lot to talk about, I use the word soul a lot to talk about the depth of what it means to be a human being and what we need in our society.
How do you define the word soul, though? What is it?
Oh, it's really hard to define. I can try. I always try to try. It's a word that describes how deep we go, and we're beyond psychology. We get affected so deeply right at our bedrock, and that's where the soul is. It's our essence. It also has to do with our ability to connect with other people. You know, I like the very plain language. People sometimes use the word soul. They say, "Well, here's a person that really has soul." What does that mean? It means that they've really lived. They're individual. They have a sense of humor. And you can trust them at a certain level. So I think the soul is a quality primarily. A quality is not a thing.
All right, it's a quality.
Yeah.
Some people have a whole lot of soul, and some people it's a little itty-bitty thing.
Yes. That's true.
Why is that? What do you think?
Well, I think that this is interesting. I think you have a soul, like you are born. Human beings are born with a sense of meaning. I mean, you don't have to be taught that. Things are meaningful. You have deep emotions. You have great desires and fears. Those are all part of the soul. And over time, I mean, you need to have that developed. You need a family that will allow you to be the individual that you need to be, and a lot of families can't handle that. You know, they want their children to be exact copies of themselves, and so their individuality, their essence, can't be seen. It's not that it's not there, but it just can't be seen. It hasn't come forward. I think that's the biggest reason why we don't have soul everywhere we look.
As you were talking about soul, it flashed upon me those itty-bitty souls seem in many respects to gravitate to working in government.
Well, you know, it is funny how certain occupations seem to favor that. And also, I think our culture today. I don't think if you looked in the history and you'd find, and all over the world, you'd find so much, well, what is it? You know, it's that kind of doing your job and not really being able to be an individual. You fit into a slot when you do a government job frequently. And so I don't think it's really the work in government itself so much as our culture today doesn't have a lot of soul. All this, you know, we're very proud of our technology and our ability, let's say in medicine, to be able to do so much. But medicine looks at our illnesses primarily as being physical. And we think of medical advance as finding new chemicals or new machinery to help us. And we really don't talk much or hear much about maybe living with more calmness and being able to handle situations and having relationships that really work. They certainly would have an impact on our health.
Well, many people are forced into an environment, though, where it's kill or be killed. He who dies with the most toys wins.
Yes.
Toxic stuff.
Yes, well, you have to watch out for that. I'm very interested in the whole idea of work, and that relates to aging as well. Because the work we do, if we decide to take a job that's it's only going to give us a certain level of comfort or money, but doesn't really touch on what we want to do with our lives, then I think you suffer that throughout your life. And that's an obstacle to aging in my sense, because to age, the way I see it, is to become a person. You do become the individual, and the reason I call it ageless soul is that the soul really comes forward then. You're able to cultivate your life so that the soul is present. Certainly a person can go into any kind of a mindless job and make it a more soul-oriented job. You know, you know that. You go to shops and stores or anywhere you go and you find where there are a lot of sort of automatons working, you find a real individual sometime who's able to transform that simple job.
What led you, though, to become interested in the whole question of aging and soul?
Well, I wrote Care of the Soul, which is kind of a basic book, 25 years ago, when I introduced my take on what the culture needed and what people need. And then after that, I wrote a lot of books. I mean, I think I've got 30 books now on my list. And so I've done a lot. And one of the things I've done is I've looked at different aspects of life, like medicine and religion and, all different sorts, like sexuality. And I've written books on all these different topics. And so aging is one that I hadn't considered before, and I'm 77 now. So very frequently what I'll do is when I write a book, I write about something that I'm trying to work out myself. So the book is I don't write a book that is a set of conclusions I've come to, but I work it out. I work things through as I write, and I like that approach for myself anyway.
What do you see then as the issues facing the aging individual?
Well, as I said, the primary one is the tendency in our society right now to treat everybody as not having a heart and soul, as being numbers or objects. Every single aspect of society is like that. I often think that years ago I taught in a psychology department. I talked to the young people coming into it, and I asked them why they were in the field, and they said they wanted to help people. And the first course they had to take and pass was statistics. They had to know how to use numbers. Well, I mean, that can be a useful thing to know, but the first course, I mean, does that mean that that's really the entryway into learning how to help people? That's where we are, you know. We want to quantify everything, and our research is all oriented toward quantifying. And imagination and reflection and sorting things out in a meaningful way, that is not the way we teach people now.
Yeah. You're talking about aging then as being a positive process, hopefully.
Yes, I am. I think it is a very positive. You know, I don't want to be Pollyanna about it. There are a lot of problems. Believe me, I know them firsthand. You know, your body begins to complain in so many ways you never thought it would. And you lose some friends. And the idea of the shortening of your life can be a sad and sometimes fearful thing. So there's a lot of bad stuff. On the other hand, there's so much that's good, because I think the main thing is that you get out of that sense where you're driven, where you have to make a career somehow, and you're trying to work out, you know, relationships so that they work for you. That takes a lot of time and energy to do all that. Well, as you age, you know, you kind of can relax about many of those things. I mean, obviously, it's not always perfect, but I think it is a good place to be, where you have a lot to offer the world. In other words, I like to say you can do things when you're old that you couldn't do when you're young. Usually that's reversed, but I think there are things. And one of the big things is that you have something to offer, just simply because you've been around a long time and you've seen things, and you have a kind of knowledge that's in your bones that you can help people, and younger people especially, but anyone might see that in you. They see that you're someone who's been open to life and has attained some ability, some skill at living. And that then can give you meaning, because you have something to contribute.
But doesn't temperament play a part in this? I mean, the rotten person is going to be a rotten person whether he's 20 or 90.
Well, that's the thing. You know, you really enter your older years with what you've accomplished when you're young. That's why in writing this book, I was really hoping I could write it in a way that younger people would be able to read it and appreciate it. Because the time to consider aging is when, you know, you're probably when you're in your 30s anyway, maybe even earlier. But, you know, I like to also point out that I have a chapter in the book on the first taste of aging. You know, there's that moment when you've been living like an immortal and suddenly you discover that, you know, you can't move like you could before, or you have a gray hair or something like that. That can happen in your late 20s and 30s and in your 30s. So aging has got to be going on when you're younger because it's very hard to catch up as you get older.
All right. In the book, you write about the whole concept of understanding and letting go. Now, we live a life where we feel abused, we have angers, we have grudges, you did this to me kinds of things. How do you let them go?
It's not easy, but it can be done. I think it means a different orientation in life. As I keep saying, the world we live in is mainly interested in the external world. It treats everything objectively. And, you know, this isn't the way it's always been. There's been a period of time in our own Western history when people were more reflective. They thought about things more. You know, they were taking philosophy courses in school. And who does that today? You know, it's not very common. It's the real exceptional person that does. And so we don't really think internally. We're not too much aware of our internal life. Like the emotions. Where do you get taught how to deal with the emotions? One of the things that I keep trying to do all the time, I write about education a lot in journals and chapters and books. I'm trying to advocate that we teach people, and it's not my idea alone, it's a movement to try to teach children and younger people how to deal with their emotions and how to make decisions in life and how to think about the meaning of their lives. Because that is, you know, there are ways to deal with these strong emotions so that you don't become older and you've got all these regrets and as you were saying, this chronic anger that you don't even understand anymore because it comes from way back in your life. So it can be dealt with, but it would be a lot better, as I said before, if we could begin this process a lot earlier.
And you're listening to WIP Sunday here on 94 WIP All Sports Radio. My name's Peter Solomon. My guest this morning is a remarkable man, Thomas Moore. He writes about life and the soul. His new book, The Ageless Soul, New Ways to Think About Aging and a Whole Lot More. Now, Thomas, if you can stay with us, I've got to run a few commercials, pay the bills. We'll be back in just a bit. The WIP time, 7:14. And we're back. It's Conversation. My name's Peter Solomon. Actually, it's WIP Sunday. I'm slipping here. It's WIP Sunday. My name's Peter Solomon. My guest this morning, Thomas Moore, author of The Ageless Soul. Thomas, for a lot of people, though, they see aging as a series of losses. You lose your eyesight, you lose your hair, you may lose your job, you may lose your spouse, you start losing friends, you lose your teeth. How do you cope with that?
Well, it's not easy. I understand completely. I feel all those things myself. But one way that helps me is that I realize that what I'm doing here is I'm living a human life. I mean, this is what human beings do. They get old, they lose their teeth and their hair and everything, and they lose their friends, and they have to deal with this sickness more. It's the way of human life. And I feel from in everything I do that I don't design this life. I don't choose to make it you know, if I could, I would certainly make it different. I wouldn't have all these problems at age. I'd have it work differently. But this is the way life is. So to be able to participate in it and to be in the human community, you know, everyone's gone through this. For myself, I often think about my mother and dad. My father died at 100, and fortunately, he was very young all his life. Sort of an inner youth was very strong in him. And my mother was a very devout woman, very simple and devout woman. And I think of them. I remember all the what it was like for them to get older and to pass on. And I think, you know, I'm in this family, and I'm following up and doing what has to be done as a human being. I'm going to do it the best way I can and the most comfortable way I can. And I really can't expect much more, but that gives me a lot of support, actually, to think of it that way.
But how did you get to that point? I mean, you easily could have chosen to be a cranky old man, and you're not.
No, that's true. I think part of it is that it's funny. I think that this youthfulness that my father had, I mean, he always loved to play with children right up to in his 90s. And he had a job in his mid-90s, and he drove his car in his mid-90s. You know, he was very youthful. And there was a downside to it. He told me that. He always would tell me that he was very slow to grow up, and it was hard for him to become an adult in society. And I feel the same way. I had my daughter when I was 51, and I sold my first real book, you know, and first really made some money when I was 50. I mean, I've been very slow to grow up. So maybe that's the price I've had to pay to stay youthful as I get older. But I feel I have my father's his psychology. It's like that's been passed on, youthfulness. So personally, for me, that's how I understand it. And but it's there, and it helps me a lot. And I try to work with young people all the time. And like my father, I learned from him to respect people. That meant a lot. I saw him respecting so many different sorts of people, showing them honor and respect, and able to talk to anybody. So I like this life I have. I'm all over the place. I'm meeting people in all these different places. I'm not an outgoing person. I mean, what I mean, I'm an introvert. But when I go out there and meet people like that, I think of my dad, and I try to imitate him, and that keeps me young.
So part of it is by example. Someone showed you an example that you chose to buy into.
It makes a big, big difference. That's why I think parenting is so important and the work of teachers is so important. I don't know if they understand that they teach with who they are more than what they know. And if teachers and parents could really be somebody, you know, if they really tried to think about the life they lead and the example they're showing their kids, how important it is, I think we'd all be a lot better off.
Mm. So very true. All right, I want to move on to another issue you deal with that I find interesting, and that's sex. I mean, old people aren't supposed to, and that's just the way people think.
Yeah.
No, Grandma and Grandpa don't do that.
Yeah.
What's your reaction?
Well, all the studies show, and here I'll go into the statistics. All the studies show that older people are very, very interested in sex. You know, it doesn't go away. And I don't know. It seems to me I don't feel any less sexual than I ever was. And so I think what we have to do is as we get older. Well, in a general sense, here's a general principle. You have to resist the society around you. And if people are thinking you shouldn't be sexual, that's their problem. You know, you've got to really resist. I feel that's true about everything we do, that part of our activity has got to be to live in our communities and make the best we can of life and, you know, enjoy our new technologies and stay with the world as it evolves. On the other hand, if you get swept away by that world around you, you're going to absorb those values. And if you absorb the idea that you shouldn't be sexual when you get older, that's a sad situation. I think you have to resist it. If someone tells you that, give them a little resistance. Don't let it go by. Tell them that, you know, they're wrong, or give them some way of rethinking the situation. We older people have to educate the younger ones constantly. You know, we have to teach them how to treat us.
You make it sound like a lot of work.
Well, I don't think it's all that much work, but it is work. I mean, you got to think about it. It's just being a person, that's all. That takes some thought. I think there's just so much unconsciousness around that people just go ahead and just live minute to minute, and they you know, they're so tuned into the media. They get all these different ideas from, mainly from, you know, videos of various kinds and all these experts, and, you know, and they don't think for themselves. So that's a way to become an automaton or a robot. So you have to think, and you have to just live life the way you need to live it, and you have to cultivate your values and think things through a bit. You know, we don't think enough. And I think that's a big problem for us. So cultivating the interior life is not an option. You have to do it, or else you're going to just wither away into the culture and be, you know, sort of a rubber stamp for everything that's being taught by the culture, which is not a very deep source, believe me.
How do you do it, though, when the body will cooperate? I'm talking about things like arthritis.
You mean sex?
No, anything, sex.
Anything.
Yeah, you're being involved in life.
Okay. Well, yes, I've got neuropathy, you know, so I have to figure out how to walk around in a way that works. And my feet, in other words, I have some pains and difficulties, limitations that way. So what I do is I do what I can for myself. I've been searching for a lot of oils and other treatments that I can do to see what works to help out. I find that kind of an interesting challenge. So it's a limitation, and these limitations you have to live with. And I don't think that if your in more interior life is really alive, I think that helps a lot with dealing with the limitations of the body. If you don't have much of an inner life and haven't thought things through, all you do is sort of unconsciously feel the sadness of your body falling apart. What a terrible way to live. You just have to rethink it, you know, and maybe you know people who have real limitations from physical illness, and they don't give up. You know, they can still live and be happy and joyful, have a sense of humor. You can do it if you can wrap your mind around it. That's the problem. It's all about how you think it through.
The age of soul is a soul that looks for the bright side, isn't it?
I think so. You know, I mean, I feel like I'm an optimist no matter what. I mean, the world is in pretty bad shape right now, and yet I feel optimistic, and I think there are reasons to feel optimistic. In fact, I've even thought about writing about optimism, you know, that's really such an important thing to have, such a great experience, or whatever that is, an emotion or an attitude toward the world, to be optimistic. And where does that come from? I think a lot of people get it from their spiritual life. And these days, that's changing a lot. So I maybe 5 years ago, I would have said from their religion. But today, I think it's more a spiritual outlook on life. If you have a bigger vision, then these limitations you have to deal with fit into the whole picture a lot better. If you don't have a bigger vision, all you can do is feel these limitations one by one, and they are overwhelming. You need a bigger vision. You have to be in nature to foster your spirituality. It's a good idea to have some access to the religions of the world, because they have a lot of wisdom toward fostering your own spirituality. But you need a bigger vision, however you do that, whatever you call it. For myself, I get it from study. I've been a student all my life, and I've learned that reading and study, I know a lot of people don't want to do that, but for me, just for me, it's been a way for me to develop my vision. Well, people can do it in other ways too. You can get it sometimes, not always. You can get it like from yoga class, you know, which is more than just physical. It might help you keep your vision alive, or you might get it from really good movies, you know, to see a movie that really helps you expand your vision of what life's all about. There are those movies around here and there. So there are sources for us, maybe even other people you run into who can help you develop your vision, because you see how they're living and they're optimistic, and you might want to hang around them and see and talk to them and see what their secret is.
Well, but some people were never raised with a spiritual life, to have a spiritual life. Some people, you know, as kids, the parents like to sleep late on Saturday and Sunday. I mean, that's essentially the way to describe it. And when you get to be an adult, it's kind of hard to make that jump into belief when there's no foundation underneath it.
Well, yes, but that's a really complicated topic. I what I'm talking about here is not so much going to church every, you know, once a week, whatever your day is or whatever church or temple you go to. I'm thinking more of, in your daily life, being able to see beyond what's right in front of you. And you can't cultivate your own spiritual life. You could by some very careful reading. I mean, what am I doing with my life? I'm writing all these books, trying to do exactly that. This weekend now, I've been giving talks the whole time, and people come up to me, and I get countless people come to me and tell me that Care of the Soul really gave them a jump start on looking at life differently and having a bigger vision. So I know that we are not in the same place where we, you know, not as many people read books as they used to. Care of the Soul, my biggest book, came out in 25 years ago, and that was a very different environment. But I think today there that we have a lot of options. You know, I watch YouTube. I get inspired by a lot of things. I listen to terrific music on YouTube, and I travel the world there. I mean, it's, you know, it's using technology for your inner life and not just for entertainment.
And you're listening to WIP, 94 WIP. It's WIP Sunday. My name's Peter Solomon. Got to run another set of commercials, I have to say. So please stay with me, Thomas Moore, author of the book, Ageless Soul. And we're back. It's WIP Sunday. My name's Peter Solomon. My guest this morning again, Thomas Moore, philosopher, author, spiritual person, his new book, The Ageless Soul. Thomas, the other thing that you do in the book that interests me is aging, well, it's just not, you know, being a certain number of years on the planet. You talk about young people aging well as also.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, one interesting fact that I always keep in mind is some really good people live short lives, you know. And so aging is something you have to think about, not just in terms of length, but in the quality of life. So, you know, a lot of great artists in the past haven't lived past 30, you know, died in their 20s, and yet they've given so much to the society. So I think we have to think about aging as something that goes on all the time. I mean, kids are aging. An infant just born is aging right away. You are getting older, and you are becoming, this is how I'd rather define aging, you are becoming yourself. You're becoming the person that you can be, that you're destined to be, and that you are equipped to be. That's really the most important thing, to be in touch with our own destiny, to let our lives unfold meaningfully. That gives a deep satisfaction. And I think that deep satisfaction is behind our health, our physical health, and our relationships. And so I think it's terribly important then, as we are growing up, I mean, even teens have to learn to age well. And to prepare themselves, you got to start at this thing as early as possible. You can do it when you're older. You can change. I've talked to a lot of people in their 60s and 70s, even 80s, who have made a big turning point. But I can tell you, it's not so easy then. It'd be so much better if we could age well, becoming, you know, letting our lives unfold with some meaningfulness, some interiority, a good sense of values, of being a global citizen, being a citizen of this planet you live on. I think that one of the most important ways, you know, you can kind of fill yourself and make yourself feel nourished and able to handle aging is through service. It's through giving something to people around you, giving something to your neighbors or to your family, to your children, but also to the world itself. Make a small contribution. I think that thinking about what job you should do, think about how you can make a contribution. And a lot of people I know are quiet. They don't say anything. They don't let their voices be heard because they don't feel that what they have to say is worth much. But I don't think that's true. Every single voice needs to be heard, And if you can speak to the world, make that contribution, I think you're going to age in a much happier way.
Loneliness is a big issue in aging, isn't it?
Loneliness does come up a lot, yeah. I notice now in my family, we have our my 92-year-old mother-in-law is living with us, and I didn't realize quite seriously enough before how important it is for an older person like that to have people around. That may not be true of everyone, but I think it's true of a lot of older people. They really need community and they need friendship. So I know in our family, we really go all out. We, you know, it takes a lot of work, but we do everything we can to help her have her friends around. And that doesn't just happen. You know, it takes some logistics and some time to be able to help that process. So I think that if when we're taking care of older people, we have to understand that that they need friends and community. Otherwise, the loneliness gets to them, and they can begin to fail because of that.
Well, not only that, though, I'm told one of the higher risk groups for suicide is the aging.
That's yeah, I know. You need hope. I mean, and hope. To be able to deal with these things that you were talking about before, Peter, you know, these illnesses and the loss of friends and that kind of thing. In order to cope with all of that, you know, you need somebody. I'm just about now, I'm starting a new book on how everyone can be a therapist, you know, to help each other out. And I think this is where it comes in, that when people are getting older, if they're just going to be lonely and on their own, they're going to have a hard time making it. I can understand some people turning to suicide. And so we need people around who can understand what it is to be a human being, understand some of these basics of what it is to be able to survive well and to stay happy as you get older. If you can do that, if we can help people who are getting older, I think that suicide risk would go down.
I read somewhere that for some older folk, getting a pet is a help. It's like another presence in the house.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. That's been shown over and over again. I like to tell the story. I worked at a hospice once where they have all these pictures of the past CEOs of the place. And the last photograph on the wall was a photograph of a dog. And I thought, boy, those people know what's going on. You know that the best therapists in the world are animals. I mean, the animals are so terrific, not just dogs, but, you know, cats and other animals. I was at another hospice once where the people in the hospice, their rooms juttered out into a pasture, and horses were out there in the pasture and would come up to their windows. Even something like that is very, very useful to people, to be in touch with that animal world. It's their world, you know, it's the world around you. That's what I said before, that if you really want to have a bigger spiritual vision, a good way to start is to get out into nature. And animals are part of that natural world. And if you can get close to the animal and observe the animal, animals can be like dogs, I know. They're the animals I know best. They can be very affectionate, or at least it seems they are, and they establish a relationship with you, and they need you, they express that need, and that's important. You know, as you get older, you need to be needed. That's another thing. So there are so many benefits from pets. I think that we could go even further than we are doing to help older people have pets around.
Well, your current book is The Ageless Soul. If we're going to read one Thomas More book, what one do you want us to read?
Aside from Ageless Soul?
Yep.
it's really hard to say. I have found, talking to people, that care of the soul is the most important for them. And they tell me, they've just been telling me this weekend and last weekend, that it's not, even though it's 25 years old, it still speaks to them completely. So that's a good place to start with me. Another book that a lot of people are helped by, especially if they're going through tough times, is a book of mine called Dark Nights of the Soul. And that helps a lot of people to deal with difficult moments in life. Otherwise, it's always the latest book that you know, you find out what I'm doing. And so Ageless Soul is a book that people are really enjoying. I have to say, I'm getting really positive feedback from it. And it's not true. You know, I've written a lot of books, and they aren't all so, maybe so friendly. This is a very reader-friendly book, and so people are getting, I'd say, go to Care of the Soul, but then try the latest one, Ageless Soul.
Well, which is more important to you then, a good review of a book or a nice royalty check?
Well, you know, I need both. I don't like to distinguish things. You know, I'm trying to make it as a writer. I've been doing it for 25 years. It isn't easy these days because the book business is failing. You know that. So part of my work has to be focused on how can I make a living at this and keep writing the books. That's a very big issue. So it's a big thing, but it's not the most important thing. Obviously, the thing that really that makes my life worth living is to be able to write these books and then go out on the road and have people come up and tell me that they really have meant so much to their lives. And I get that, and it's so sincere. I've been getting it, especially recently, since I've been traveling a lot. So that keeps me going. It's the most important thing, the people's response. But I also have to keep my eye on the paycheck. I mean, I couldn't write books if I couldn't make a living at it.
Absolutely. But is the book business failing or is it changing? I mean, it seems to be one of the things that's happened, or two things that have happened. One is maybe people are reading a little less, but there's also the electronic book, the Nook, those things.
Yes, I think you're right. I think I made a mistake there. I think you're correct that it's changing rather than failing. Yeah, it's changing. Maybe from my point of view, because I kind of feel I was in the golden days when I first started out, but it's true, it's changing, and I'm trying to think that way, and I have a very good relationship with the publishers, like especially New York publishers, and know what they're doing, and I admire them so much that they are doing their very best to deal with the changes that are going on. And when I talk to people about books now, I find that I think the number is that half of books that are being read are e-books. They're being read on tablets and things like that. But I find that a lot of people are listening to books. An awful lot of people are in their cars, or they're going on trips, or other ways, too. They're just listening to books. And so I make an effort to do a good audio book so that people can listen and get something from the audio. And if I can say, well, while we're on the subject, Peter, I wanted to say before that when I was talking about how people can develop their spirituality today, having good ideas and good conversation is a big part of it. And your work as a radio host, I think, is extremely important today for that, because it's great that people can tune in and listen to conversation. And, I mean, that's part of the development of this interior life that I'm talking about. I have a tremendous respect for radio and the work that you do.
Thank you. One last question, Thomas Moore. When it's all over and you're not here anymore, how do you want to be remembered?
Well, I guess it's really hard to say. People who know me, I hope that they laugh and remember the funny and good times. The sense of humor is so important to me, and I learned that from my family. My family that I grew up with had a tremendous sense of humor. It's a big Irish Catholic family. And that's one thing I'd like to be able to have them talk. And I'd like to remember me with heart, that they feel, you know, they feel something for me. And I feel very blessed to be able to have these books, leave the books behind me, because I hope that they will be read at least for a while after I'm gone.
Oh, I'm sure they will. They'll probably be in the Rare Book Library in about 100 years. But that's another discussion. And I'm going to say thank you to Thomas Moore, a remarkable man with a remarkable point of view, his new book, The Ageless Soul. Thank you, Thomas.
Thank you, Peter.
My pleasure. And it's been another edition of WIP Sunday here on 94 WIP All Sports Radio. My name's Peter Solomon. It's a rainy WIP Sunday, although it's supposed to clear up later today. But no matter where you go, stay dry and take us with you for a good conversation. I want to say thank you to Phil Jackson, this morning's producer. Couldn't do it without you. And Ann Tideman Solomon, my dear wife and associate producer, critical to the operation. Stay tuned for Sports Talk with Sunny Hill. If you can't, nothing left to say, but see you soon.